This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get. Except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week is Sam Claiborne.
Hey, everybody.
Justin Davis.
Scoop.
And Michael Swaim has returned. Welcome back to the show, Michael.
Swaim Scoop.
Tina's very, very busy this week, so she regrets she has to sit this one out. But we're very happy to have Michael Swaim back.
Thrilled to be here.
You were very popular last time, Michael. You've got quite the fan base.
Good reception.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was buzzing. I got a meanie.
Send us a... I want Swaim. Send Swaim fan art.
Yeah, let's get some Swaim fan art in here.
Frankly, I asked for you not to be back on because you made us look bad.
Yeah, but as time cops, can't you go back in time and make me not have done that?
We are Omega cops.
Omega,
not time, not time cops.
Well, I would assume if you're Omega, that encompasses the time cops. See, I saved it.
I got kicked out of Time Cop when I was a kid. I went to a movie with a friend. Mm-hmm. We were like 13 or whatever. Went in and we're sitting down. His mom had bought us tickets and then went to shop in the mall or whatever.
Yeah.
Dropped us off there. And the usher came down, who was probably a year older than us. He's like, sirs, how can I see some ID? And we're like, we're already watching the damn movie. And then he evicted us. And then his mom went to the ticket counter. She's like, I bought tickets for them to go see. I think I can make that decision. They're like, sorry, this is a rated R movie.
I have a similar story where I was 8 or 9. And Jurassic Park was in movie theaters. And a bunch of my friends went to the movie theater. And I guess there must have been a grown-up with us. Or maybe they went to go see a grown-up movie instead. And we had tickets. We had tickets to see Cool Runnings. And all my friends snuck in. They're like, we're going to go see Jurassic Park. And I'm like, no, I want to see Cool Runnings. The movie seems really funny.
So much.
I think both have stood the test of time.
They really have.
Yeah, probably.
So I sat there by myself as like a 9-year-old and watched Cool Runnings when all my friends saw Jurassic Park.
Okay, I'm sorry. I gotta go. The first R-rated movie I snuck into with my little brother, 3 years my junior, with me was The Piano, and we just did it because it was R-rated. It turns out that movie's R-rated because Harvey Keitel appears fully nude in it. That's it.
Yeah.
So we just saw a tense drama and Harvey Keitel nude, and we're like, I don't see what the big deal is with these R-rated movies. It was no Jurassic Park.
You're like, this is what grown-up movies are?
Yeah, exactly.
Ass.
Well, anyway, we have a great GameScoop for you this week. We're going to be talking about the Nintendo Giga Leaks a little bit. Giga Leak is not a new Pokemon. One of our listeners has some nitpicks about Ghosts of Tsushima they'd like to share with us. But first,
Let's talk about the Xbox showcase from last week. Last week we had to record before the Xbox showcase, robbing the world of our opinions of the show. So we're even though we're a little bit late, we can solve that problem now.
But last, Harvey Keitel appeared and.
Well played.
There's been a little bit of a controversy about the Halo Infinite gameplay reveal. Some people thought it looked like a fun new Halo game and they're excited. But yet others were a little bit disappointed in the visuals. They were a little surprised that it didn't wow them. It didn't look particularly next gen. And in all honesty, I'd put myself in that latter camp. We have an email from one of our listeners, TheBusDriver05, who says, as a longtime gamer, I was a little shocked and curious why there was so much backlash to the Halo Infinite reveal. To me, it is clear that we have reached a generational point where we need to shift our way of thinking away from how we expect games to look and instead focus on the quality of life upgrades these new consoles will bring instead of graphics. Does no one remember that when the current gen launched, it was 2 years before games started to feel next gen? Watch Dogs, Assassin's Creed, Black Flag, and others didn't seem much better than the prior generation counterparts. Personally, it wasn't until I played The Witcher 3 a year and a half after launch that I felt I was playing something that actually was next gen. So why all the backlash to Microsoft, especially considering PlayStation hasn't shown anything that has looked next gen either? Honestly, I was just whelmed by both games' showcases, but I'm still excited to buy both consoles due to the quality of life improvements these systems will bring. Thanks for being the closest thing to a gaming magazine subscription I can look forward to. I like that last comment.
Oh, that's really cute.
There's definitely some truth to that. Like, there's always the generation launches, and there's games that look good or maybe even great, but then he's totally right. Like, it takes a little while for, like, the game that you're like, oh, I get it. Like, this is what we can do now that we couldn't do before. Like, the example that's always in my head is, like, around BioShock or like Gears of War on the Xbox 360. And before that, we were just sort of playing like I don't know, like Perfect Dark Zero is an Xbox 360 game. And that game doesn't look very good. So,
And yet that line's getting fuzzier, right? Like Last of Us Part 2 dropping on this generation, I found it hard to believe that this was possible coming out of this same launch day PS4 box that I've been playing all the previous games on. So I think it does depend on the developer. I was definitely with Damon being a little bit, I'm not graphics forward myself, but it seems to me that Halo is a graphics forward franchise and I was firmly underwhelmed.
Well, I will say if anyone says that game doesn't look very impressive to them, like, you know, I respect that opinion. It doesn't look as impressive or as eye-popping as a game like Horizon as it was presented to us. But, like, what some people may not be considering is that game's running at 4K 60 FPS. Mm-hmm. It's an open-world game, a fully open-world game running at 4K 60. And that's pretty hard to get across. That's very impressive from a technical standpoint. And that's not very easy to get across in, like, a live-streaming environment.
Yeah, that's true. I guess for me, like Swain was just saying, there's just been multiple games, on PS4 that I've been playing recently, like Last of Us Part 2 and Ghost of Tsushima. And even going back a couple of years to Red Dead Redemption 2, where God of War, I played these games and I was amazed. I was stunned at how, amazing they looked. So, you know, Microsoft has the most powerful console ever and has this one of the biggest launch titles ever, their flagship series. So let's take a look. And I was like,
But none of those games are 4K 60 FPS.
That's true. I mean, that's true. I guess it's just like, you know, what's important to you.
It's a fair caveat, but I think it still means it's worth like interrogating why they chose to show it in that context now. Obviously they very intentionally were like, this is our foot forward. I'm surprised they didn't foresee a little backlash. Yeah, go ahead.
They did foresee backlash, I think. And I think what they also foresaw was that everybody's not showing gameplay. Nobody's showing gameplay for anything. All we get is cinematic bullshit. And I'm tired of it. Like, all we're getting is really cool cinematic trailers for like all of your favorite games. Think back what you've seen. A little bit of Assassin's Creed battle stuff. Like, that's what you've seen from next gen so far. There's just not much that's been shown. There's the Ratchet and Clank footage, but that's not launch, right? That's like some nebulous, like, future date. So I think showing gameplay from a launch game is really cool, and it's all I want to see. So, like, did I determine whether I want to play that game? I absolutely want to play that game. It's got a grappling hook. It's got Halo stuff. It looks really, really fun. And so I think like they probably didn't anticipate like it only being a discussion of the graphics because there was a lot of other cool stuff going on there. I wanted to read, Tina had written a little statement about this. So can we check can we check in with the panelists?
Yeah, I will cede some time back to Tina. That's fair.
She said that, I felt that everything from the music and UI and sound effects, et cetera, were intentionally designed to hit on nostalgic Halo experiences, but I understand some of the negative feedback on it, not feeling like next gen. The game was packaging the feeling like it's supposed to because it's their next gen game, both because of the showcase's highlight of it and because of Xbox's history with it. So, like, I think that's a really good point, right? It's like, did it look like Halo? It looked more like Halo than the games that were Halo on the last console. It looks a lot more like Halo 3 and 2, which is so exciting to me. I think that's great just because it's nostalgic.
Well, you also, I mean, Sam, you said it before we started recording. We're like, we have not seen launch PS5 gameplay. Like, Sony's pulled a little bit of a magic trick on people. We're like, I'm excited for Miles Morales. I'm going to play that, but we haven't seen that video game yet. Like, so you know, Microsoft sort of like, they went first when it comes to this stuff. Like, you know, launch PS5 games probably aren't going to look radically different than this.
Yeah, although I should say I haven't traditionally been much of a Halo fan, so you know maybe it would take more than just like a solid looking gameplay demo to get me excited. But I really like open world first person shooters like Far Cry and Borderlands. So if Halo's sort of skewing more in that direction, this might be the first Halo game in a long time that I enjoy.
Yeah, our previewers who got to do a bunch of interviews and stuff like that ahead of the conference. And we have like a 4 separate stories up about Halo, which you should check out because it's a bunch more information than you can just see in that demo. But they had mentioned that there's a lot more backtracking, and that's what the map means in that game. And that there's kind of like these big open areas. I talked to Miranda who had been one of the people writing about this. And I said, like, is this more Metroid like, and she said she wouldn't go that far, But that's the concept of it, is that you have a very, very large arena. And Halo has had that and that's what's really good for vehicles. And I really always like that about, like, okay, I'm tired of playing this level by running around. You can just hop in a ghost and try to get it through the whole level. I think that's really fun, like cram it through doorways and stuff like that. So I think it'll be great. Like, just at some point, you'll probably be able to like shortcut by like hopping in something that flies and getting back to where you were before. Like, that'd be super cool.
Mm-hmm. I'm also very interested to see actually how they tackle the storytelling, because I just did a video for us that entailed going through the story of every Halo game. And it is a very, it's very movie-like. It's very linear, and Master Chief's adventures are what they are. It's no Mass Effect. There's not a split at the end. And playing Ghost of Tsushima, I was just talking to a friend about how there's a unique structure to the way open world games dispense story, because it has to be choose your own adventure in any way that you want to meander through it. I'm just really interested to see how a story about Cortana and Master Chief plays out in an open world, because I do think they'll adapt to that. It will be slightly different.
Okay, another game that was shown off in the Microsoft presentation was Grounded, something new from Obsidian. People describe it like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. A bunch of kids are shrunk down to very small size, and they're in a backyard, and they need to make their way home. And there's a lot of, as I understand it, base building with found items that you scrounge up. And then, of course, enemies are all sort of like bugs that you'd find in your backyard.
It's a survival game, yeah.
Yeah,
it's
very excited for this game.
I think it's out very soon. Yeah.
Or it's out now.
Got it.
They have a hit. It had 250,000 people watching it on Twitch, I think.
Oh, okay.
And top of Steam.
But we've been talking a little bit about accessibility features in modern games recently, and this one has a really, really interesting one. The spiders are a big threat in this game, so they included an arachnophobia mode where you can turn the spiders into cute little blob things, and it's not even an on-off switch. It's actually a slider, so you can determine for yourself how spider-like or not you want those enemies to be.
Wow. Yeah. I wish I had that.
Levels, it drops some legs, it drops some hair.
Yeah.
It just ends up as this like little like piece of popcorn with eyes.
Yeah.
I needed that in my Sim Ant days. The spiders were just the scourge of the game. Yeah.
Or in the original Resident Evil 2 when you were down in the sewers. Man.
That's right.
Honestly, I'm a baby and I can't, like, Alien Isolation's a game that I understand is very good and I just can't make my way through it. I would love a slider on that game to just be able to play it. Where the alien becomes
addressing like a phobia. So if it, which is really specific, it's like, it's not making the game less scary, like taking out jump scares and stuff like that. It's like saying like this creature you might be afraid of, we're going to make look like a different creature.
Well, the it's heart wants what it wants, Sam. Yeah.
I like the idea.
It's really specific and funny and good.
I think it's cool too. I mean, I like, this reminds me, this is a weird leap, but I'm going to bring it around. I promise. Like the Suikoden role-playing games, just as a fun bonus feature, let you customize your sound effects. So like instead of a sword slash, you can make it like a cat meow. And like, it's silly, like it's random, but, and their attitude is sort of like, well, you know, why not? It's just a silly thing to put in the game. And it's like, it has a similar vibe to me of like, you know, sure. Like, why not? Right. Like it's going to change. It changes nothing from a gameplay standpoint. Like,
yeah,
what does it matter if they're really spider-like or not?
I loved when I realized there was a vegetarian option in Dead Cells, so your health pickups become
exactly
all vegetarian. Hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah, I just thought that was a super interesting sort of a new way to approach and think about accessibility
options. I was thinking about like, so there's like people with shark phobias, and I think it'd be really cool to see what Maneater was like with just like a I don't know, like a really nice shark replacement. Maybe
but you are the shark.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. How I mean, I think spiders are part of this game.
I would like to see this applied to all games with clowns. I think I have the public support on that.
What's a good non-scary replacement for a clown that gets the point across?
Well, it could still be popcorn. That's still kind of circus themed.
Yeah.
Or cotton candy.
Yeah. What about a shark?
I'd be less scared of a shark. Yeah.
What about they replaced it with spiders and clown outfits?
Yeah.
There aren't a lot of clowns in games.
Dropsy is the one that comes to mind, and you would want to replace him, but yeah.
I think there's a horrible clown enemies in games like Bubsy and Sonic.
So we're going to replace them all with sharks filled with spiders? Is that what that's where we landed?
Like it's an anthropomorphic clown, but the top is just like a spider stuffed into the neck hole and just kind of like coming
neck
out.
Hole. The neck hole.
Yeah, I think it's like squirming. You know,
we were trying to make it less scary, Sam. You just invented the scariest thing I've ever heard of.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they chant, Coelho, Coelho,
Coelho. Cool. Okay, moving on. Let's talk about these Nintendo leaks, the Giga leaks. I'm sure you've seen these by now. All sorts of information stolen from Nintendo somehow. Hackers got a hold of it and they've sort of been distributing it online. Confirms all sorts of things like Luigi was actually in Mario 64 at one point. We've seen pre-rendered backgrounds that were intended for use in Ocarina of Time. We've
Yoshi seen sprite- was super derpy.
Yeah, a more realistic version of Yoshi where he's less cute.
Yeah.
We've seen sprite sheets for a side scrolling follow-up to Zelda 2. It's crazy how much information has been out there. We've got an email about this from Neil from London, Canada. And he says, with all the Nintendo GigaLeak news, people clearly want to talk about what was released. Do you think there's a line between the importance of reporting factual events and digging through information gained by illegal hacking for the sake of clicks?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Justin.
I just like, I completely agree with the premise of the question. Like, it actually really bothers me. Like, I'm a huge game fan. I'm really fascinated. I love seeing the Yoshi sprite. I love seeing all this stuff, but I'm uncomfortable with like, it was stolen. Like, it's a stolen thing. Like, it's like rifling through someone's private work. And especially when it's creative work that deliberately was never intended to see the light of day. Like, I don't know. It makes me feel a little bit skeevy. But you know, the game fan in me is still really interested in seeing like Luigi's sprite in Mario 64 and everything else that's been coming out, or polygons, I should say. But
I agree with that. It's like people are interested in the stuff because they love Nintendo and they love these games and these characters and they want to learn more about all this stuff that they grew up loving. But at the same time, it's insanely disrespectful to Nintendo and the people that created these games.
Yeah, it's too bad that Nintendo has been traditionally so inaccessible. They've had some cool windows into history. Sometimes, like there was the Mario All-Stars on Wii booklet, had some pretty cool stuff in it. There's the Zelda Dark Horse books, have some pretty neat things in it. And then there's the Wada Asks column, right? That was like a really cool behind the scenes-y thing. But there's just these little tidbits, and to see that not only was this stuff like, you know, stolen, but it was out there. Is like fascinating to me. Like the fact that it's not destroyed and that it's like archived in some way, but also, you know, they've never figured out a way they want to share that stuff publicly is really interesting. You know, people don't bat an eye at stealing ROMs, and they don't bat an eye at all these other things that, like, you know, I might wag my finger at more than other people. But for some reason, the reaction to this has really been about the theft and about the discussion around, you know, covering it, not covering it from journalistic standards, but more like how do archivists cover it, and like where does it belong in a museum? I think that's all really interesting stuff, but like, boy, is there like some nuances there that are hard to understand, especially from people that like will do anything in the world to rip a ROM and put it on the internet of every single iteration of Rare games, right? Like that's like a militant movement to preserve games, and this was done in a that's stealing, first of all, and this is too. And again, it's nuanced, but it's not, it's all theft. And so I don't know why this has been a hubbub, but I suspect it's because organizations that are doing a lot of this preservation are probably trying to work with Nintendo on doing it legitimately.
Yeah. And it speaks to the tremendous demand. I mean, it's a pretty slow trickle. As much as Nintendo does some things to archive its greatest work, obviously, people are still, there's a bottomless appetite for, I mean, where's the Mario 64 remaster already? I need it. And behind the scenes stuff,
10 years ago,
that's true. Behind the scenes stuff has the same effect. I just think it's so interesting to see how Nintendo once again is the exception that proves the rule, with other game companies trying to navigate how soon do we let the consumer into the creative process. And in the case of the Halo team, it might have been too early or it might have not been. But regardless, I think that's interesting how this is the flip side of that coin of we're only going to ever show you finished things. And in the end, the game is private property. So that's our right, which is absolutely true. But I do think it's that nuance is very much there, because this stuff does belong in a museum. You just want to see them do what Ubisoft does sometimes and sort of roll with it and go, all right, it's out there, so we're going to create a virtual museum. But no, they clamp down.
They're the company with the most history that has the most rabid hardcore fans. It's also among the most secretive. Like, they don't, you know, Awada Ask is wonderful, and you're right, they have those art books, Sam, but like you completely nailed it. We're like, it's their right to not be that forthcoming, but they are remarkably and particularly non-forthcoming with their creative process, and that all combines into like this stew that makes this, you know, just a particularly irresistible interest to people.
Mm-hmm. Have you guys seen the Making of Star Wars books?
Yeah, I have the Empire one, which is
the Empire one's incredible. Yeah, and then all three of them are really cool, and it just shows you what like good archiving can give to the world. Like, it's incredible seeing a day by day, you know, accounting of how those movies are made, and with all the photography and the sometimes embarrassingly bad, you know, pre-production renders of Yoda and stuff like that. I mean, it's great. It's so cool. And I think video games in general are a industry that is definitely secretive and not prone to archiving and stuff like that. I don't really know why that is. It has to do with spoiler culture now. There's all this stuff wrapped up in that. You know, I did an interview with Joel Hodgson from MST3K last week. And in it, he said that Netflix was the only disappointment about working with Netflix is that they were just completely secretive. And MST3K's comeback was all about, hey fans, here's what we're doing this week. Hey fans, what do you think of this? And like really interacting with fans. And then Netflix was like, you can't do any of that. Like none of it. And it was all because of, I guess, like embargoes and spoilers and like all this stuff, but it just didn't work for them. And I just think there's like definitely a veil of secrecy around contemporary stuff now, which is different than before.
In the case of Nintendo in particular, you know, maybe every company's like this, but I know they in particular will try an idea and experiment with something, and then they'll bring it back 20 years later. Like the example that's springing to mind is with the N64 DD, they played around with the tool where you could make faces and make little avatars, an avatar creator, and it didn't work. and they sat on it, or maybe it did release in some weird DD product, and then that became Miis on the Nintendo Wii. Like, they sit on stuff, and like, it never really goes away, and that's been in the back of my head as like maybe one reason why they're really reticent to like like, one of the leaks I saw was a game where a character was walking on their own. They were sleepwalking, and then you have to move blocks around and destroy and get rid of enemies, and it was a Super Nintendo game that I think used the mouse. We're like popping balloons and stuff, so this character could walk. Like, yeah, and then that became, that's Yoshi Touch and Go on the DS. That exact game came out on the DS with Yoshi as the star. And so I think that that company, like, who knows what weird and crazy stuff are in their archives that, you know, maybe we'll never see the light of day, or maybe will get recycled for, you know, in a different context in the future.
Yeah, it's incredible. Put Yoshi in Super Mario Brothers, like the first game.
Yeah.
Like, that was like the goal. And it was like a generation. I bet they built the Super Nintendo to make Yoshi.
Probably.
Sorry, Michael.
Oh, I was just going to say, it's kind of inspiring, and it's almost got a, like a Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory effect, because I have to imagine the majority of devs, once they've committed years of time and budget to a game, they're like, even if this isn't per se panning out exactly as cool as we thought it would be, this has to go to market. The you know, the train's left the station. And I think at the end of the day, that's how we end up with a lot of mediocre games. It's cool to see companies like Blizzard. I got to interview some Blizzard folks, and they had the same sort of policy. And Nintendo, where their work on tons of experiments and mechanics that they are absolutely willing to abandon or put in the drawer for, like Justin said, 20 years later.
Yeah.
I do think that ends up giving us some of the best games that we wouldn't get otherwise.
Yeah. It's a strange situation.
I also
go ahead.
This the last point I want to make on this is there is some nuance between like, look, confirmed Luigi was going to be in Mario 64. And it's like, well, yeah. No, what's confirmed is that he was cut from Mario 64. It's like, yeah. What we're seeing, it's like seeing drafts of a novel, you know, it's like, yeah. Well, that stuff isn't in the final work. So like,
or it confirms that somebody in an afternoon was like, look what I did, guys.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Just, so nothing.
Like, we, you know, you're seeing early drafts, you know, there's with Ocarina of Time, there's the Kokiri Forest, an early draft of that where it's huge and everything's really, really, really spread out and it's empty. And like, it looks weird. Like the finished version is compact and everything like is a lot more charming. And like, you're seeing an early draft of something. So I think IGN, I'm proud of our coverage of this and our discussion now. I think we've, you know, I'm pleased with the nuance we were able to bring to it, but like, some people have not been as, you know, it's like confirmed this was in this game. It's like, well, it's just part of the creative process. Things come and go all the time.
Confirmed. Yeah. There was a meeting where someone said, should Luigi be in it? And someone said, nah.
Yeah.
It's not that big of a deal in the grand scheme of Mario.
Yeah.
We did a cool roundup of this that Joe Scrubbles wrote on the site, which you can check out. But I think it's also significant that like so much of the stuff that's being shared is visual. And it's just like, you get to like see these cool pieces of art, or it's art, you know, that somebody designed and carefully assembled in pixel form often. And that's like so, so incredibly rare. I mean, you get stuff out of interviews and people talk about the good old days, but like, man, to like see some of the stuff is like just such a treat. It's so irresistible.
Well, and we,
I just want to say, like, I agree. Like, I find this stuff fascinating too. And I guess I am glad to have seen it and know about it now. But if I had been given like the choice, like if I were walking down the street and a guy in a trench coat in an alley was like, hey, kid, want to see some secret Nintendo stuff I stole? I'd be like, no, thank you.
There's the stolen goods part of it is the source code, which is that's very actively bad, right? Like, I don't know. Maybe this is a completely made up distinction, but in my mind, seeing Luigi's model in Mario 64 is like in the public interest. Like, we're all fans and want to see that. But like, the actual code, the line by line code of how those games were built, like Nintendo games feel special and have a better feel in their platforming and everything else than almost anyone else on Earth. So it feels really dangerous and awful that like that actual building blocks of code is now out there in the world. That's that. Again, this is a distinction in my own mind that I've made up, but like, that feels worse to me than like, you know, art assets or like early versions of a level. That's just sort of fascinating to see.
Yeah.
You know, that like for like a brief period, and this could still be true for the vast majority of it, everybody's like, is this real or not? Like, it's just hard to tell, right? If something's real or fake, and we're dealing with, you know, hackers that could be pulling one over on us. I don't know. And so it wasn't until like Dylan Cuthbert, the creator of Star Fox, had like started retweeting some of the things that were discovered. He's like, man, I haven't seen this in 30 years. And people were like, oh boy.
Okay, let's do run through some tiny scoops before we get to our emails. Sam, do you know what the Arcade Archives is released this week on Switch and PS4?
No, hit me.
Burger Time.
Nice. That's really cool. The actual Data East upright machine?
Yep. Well, yeah. The digital version of that.
There's one 10 feet behind me in the next room over.
Yeah. And one in the IGN offices. We have a Burger Time conference room that I miss dearly now.
Yeah.
Great game. Really fun. It's really, really hard to figure out the fourth level in that game that you have to run to the right and run up right away. That's my pro tip.
Mediocre conference room, to be honest.
That's not one of our best. Not one of our best conference rooms.
Great game. Never want to have meetings in that room.
And then, Sam, have you finished Curse of the Moon 2?
No, because I'm on a boss right now, which is like I'm really far because I can see on the map I like got to the end kind of, unless there's like some surprise. It's so far to get to the boss that I was like, I'm really frustrated because it's like you can do the boss fight and learn the boss patterns and the boss is ridiculously hard. But like getting there is taking so long now that I'm just like, oh my gosh, I got to spend 10 minutes to like replay this boss. And I don't really like that.
Yeah.
But I got really far.
Did you know there's a new mode out now?
No, I'll check it out.
It's called Legend Mode, and it's meant to make the game even harder. Mm-hmm. So it makes it so enemies respawn off screen if you backtrack a little bit, just like it's so common in old NES games.
It is nice being able to like eliminate everything in a room and then can kind of be chill, but that would suck.
And also in Legend Mode, one character dying counts as all characters dying.
Oh, that'd be really hard because some of those characters have like no life.
Yeah. I still need to get back to that when I finish Panzer Paladin. And then, Justin, Kingdom Rush, the original Kingdom Rush, is out on Switch today.
Oh, cool.
It's a really great, solid tower defense game that's just like several years old now. But
I was going to say, that's a lot. That's like what? It's got, 7 years old, maybe?
I think one or more of the sequels are already on the Switch, and now the original is on Switch.
Great. Play it if you haven't.
Yeah. Cool.
It's just tower defense, like medieval or something?
It's just a really fun, polished tower defense game.
Some stuff.
Yep. Cool. Place archers, place sorcerers, place warriors. Yeah. It's great. It's like one of the best tower defense series I've ever played.
Mm-hmm. No tiny scoop for Swaim. All of Swaim's favorite games are dead and gone.
I'm still learning what makes a Swaimy game.
That's true.
I know it's Death Stranding.
It takes time.
Yeah.
That might throw you off, actually, if that's your North Star,
We need more Strand games?
Strand.
That's it. I'm exclusively a Strand genre player.
But you're playing Ghost of Tsushima, Swaim?
I just finished it last night. Not like Platinum trophied it, but I've been to every location and done every mission. I can't find all the Mongolian artifacts, and I won't. I refuse to.
All right,
but other than that, I loved it.
Perfect. You're going to be able to weigh in on our next topic. This episode of Game Scoop is brought to you by NordVPN. As Scoop Nation knows, your Omega Cops have been a little obsessed with a movie called Weekend at Bernie's lately. But as happens too often these days, it is difficult to find it streaming here in the US. That's where NordVPN comes in. With NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a more enlightened region where they appreciate the comic delights of Weekend at Bernie's. And it's not just for streaming movies and shows. Switching your virtual location can allow you to save money by purchasing flights, hotels, and subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price. And you can do all this worry-free as NordVPN threat protection features protect you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. Best of all, NordVPN costs the price of a cup of coffee a month, and one account can be used on up to 6 devices. To get the best discount on your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/gamescoop. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nordvpn.com/gamescoop. 1 in 5 Americans has learned a new language on their bucket list, or life backlog, if you will. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Upgrade your personal skill set in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Its tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. I have a trip to Mexico coming up, so I've been using Babbel to brush up on my Spanish. The courses are short and sweet, so I can do one whenever I have a few minutes to spare. And the words and phrases it teaches you are designed for practical, real-world use, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions. Babbel can even provide you feedback on your pronunciation with its speech recognition tech. And it's not just for Spanish. Babbel includes 14 different language courses, each backed by a 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for Scoop Nation. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, only for our listeners, at babbel.com/gamescoop. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/gamescoop, spelled BABBEL.com/gamescoop. Rules and restrictions may apply. Let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Listeners, remember you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@IGN.com, just like Caleb from Kansas City did. He said, I've been playing Ghost of Tsushima. I've really enjoyed it so far, but there's been something about the game that has bothered me. The lack of dismemberment. It's hard to fathom Jin's superiorly crafted katana cannot cut off limbs, but can gush out so much blood. So I wanted to pose a question to the group. Why do you guys think there is no dismemberment? Is there a game design reason, or would it turn off younger players or parents? I think adding this element in the game would make it feel much more visceral. Curious to hear what you all have to say.
Well, first of all,
slider for dismemberment.
Yeah, they should. But it
was turn their limbs into popcorn. It was really weird. First of all, there is dismemberment. There's the triangle circle move. It's not Heavenly Strike, but the other one. I forget what it's called. But where he does the classic samurai movie move of like jutting across very quickly with a single swipe. And if you notice, if you take someone's health bar to zero doing that, their hand will be cut off. Mm-hmm. I think that's it. Oh, and when you slaughter...
decapitations.
There's decapitations when you slaughter a leader from stealth. So I assume they mean like... Star Wars style, which Jedi Fallen Order didn't have also, by the way, or did it?
It did only for robots.
Only for robots, that's right. Animals. Like, cutting off every limb.
You can try a protocol droid in two.
Are there games that have full-on dismemberment prominently featured? I'm trying to
probably, but I don't think it's very common.
Big Buck Hunter.
I mean, the game... I think Ghost is great, but even besides the dismemberment, it has these really weird canned death animations, and people noticed it when that game was first revealed. They're like, this is gorgeous, but that aspect of it is just odd. Like, it just feels kind of unfinished and unpolished.
That's true, and the aspect of killing a guy right in front of his buddies and them just quickly shuffling the other way felt like a throwback to when stealth was simpler.
Yeah,
you are fighting enemies with armor for the most part, so it would be hard to dismember them. Yeah. And you're not using a lightsaber. We got to remember that. But
I was going to say, I don't know how common dismemberment was in feudal Japan. You know, it's still no matter how sharp your katana is, you still got to cut through bone to hack a limb off. You know,
A lot of the deaths are from like a chest stab or a like a slash all the way across the body or the neck stab. Yeah. Ugh. Seemingly very deadly, painful ways to go. It's crazy how the enemies are crawling around, not dead after you take it. You slash them a bunch too.
Yeah, you do have to take them out. I think it's a completely legitimate question to ask, and like you know, it's 2020, and maybe it's reducing the game's realism. But just the sociopathy of like, why can't I chop their limbs off? It's like, come on, man. Like, this is really what we need to be worrying about.
I don't find that it would have enhanced my experience much, but I do think it speaks to something that's legitimate. Like GoldenEye, I've always maintained, really broke through because it was one of the first games where you shot them in the body affected the death animation. That blew my mind at the time. So I get where it comes from, but I will say now in my mid-30s, just pumping the violence slider all the way to the top doesn't do it for me like it used to when I was lusting over Mortal Kombat and my parents wouldn't let me have it.
No, like, and I'm not giving anybody a hard time, to be clear. That's just the way that we talk about video games sometimes. It's like, if you're not aware of like how video games work, it just sounds horrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't know if there's any sort of like design challenge that poses. Like, you have a character model, and if you cut off a limb, like there's now a part of that character model. So I don't know if that's hard, for the program to process. I have no idea.
How did your parents find out about Mortal Kombat?
I believe from a full page ad in a GamePro magazine I left lying open. Yeah. I thought I was planting the seed for a Christmas present. I was just letting them know what to forbid me to do. The other big one was Night Trap. My mom ran in and ripped it out of the Sega CD and was like, I saw on the news that you can't play this game.
Wow. I can't believe you wanted to play Night Trap.
Full motion video, baby. It's the wave of the future. Still.
Yeah. I played plenty of FMV games on my Sega CD, but I somehow just missed Night Trap.
How crazy was it to see the control sequences that were FMV and realize it took me a second to believe, oh, these are actors. Wow.
Some other game has done that recently too. I think that's cool now to mix that stuff in because it's usually around like cool game effects and stuff like that. But yeah, that was the projector in that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially.
So I'm currently in Act 2 of Ghosts of Tsushima. Sam, where are you?
I'm deep Act 3.
Deep Act 3. Okay. And Justin?
I stopped playing it.
Okay. You just went back to Lord of the Rings Online?
Well, that's what I was going to say. It's nothing against Ghosts, but I exclusively play Lord of the Rings Online now. I mean, look, like they need help.
Yeah, I know.
Was there any particular reason or facet or moment where you fell off? Or was it just natural entropy?
It has less to do with Ghosts and more to do with Middle Earth. The brigands were encroaching on the town of Bree, and goblins had set up a camp in the Midgewater Marsh.
Unbelievable.
And if that weren't bad enough, orcs bearing a white hand had come down from the north out of the North Downs, and so Bree was really in a lot of trouble.
Sourman is due southeast of there.
No, but those orcs are everywhere, man. Like I agree with you, Sam, and I understand what you're saying, but it's, you know, it is what it is. And now I'm making my way up to, there was some strange lights seen on the top of Weathertop. So I'm on way there now to investigate what was going on.
Do you think that was when is this?
You follow the Fellowship.
Okay. So that's what was happening. It was that the Fellowship was fighting off the Red Knights.
Yep. Wow. Exactly.
Okay.
Well, that all sounds exciting. So then, Swaim, since you've finished the story in Ghost of Tsushima, what's your overall assessment?
Oh, that I felt like it was, to mix metaphors, like someone hitting a home run with meat and potatoes. It felt very much like, which I think is the general journalist, like reviewer consensus. It felt like it picked up the torch that Assassin's Creed gradually set down. It reminded me of playing classic AC games in a way that I found very joyous because Odyssey was a bit too much for me. And I enjoyed it all the way through. It is the best photo mode I've ever seen. And photo mode, by the way, is totally a new obsession for me. This game and Death Stranding, I think I spent about half my time setting up perfect shots. And I don't know why. I don't know what I gain. I just enjoy doing it. That's my Animal Crossing is video game photography.
Are you all in on Pokemon Snap?
Oh, I can't wait. Yes, very much so. Pokemon Snap's going to be great.
Once someone explained to me that Pokemon Snap was basically a first-person shooter game, like a non-violent first-person shooter game, I was like, oh.
It's just a rail shooter.
Yeah, it's like Time Crisis, but instead of killing things, you're just photographing them.
Just snapping photos.
Sometimes you hit them with apples.
Although, they're putting in a slider where you can dismember Pikachu, but...
Yeah.
Yeah,
sure.
You can barely tell those little limbs. You can barely tell.
A dismemberment slider would be particularly gruesome because if you just move it a little bit, the head doesn't completely come off. You need to give it a few more. Okay, this is Eric from Boston. He says, can someone explain what goes into a delay, especially a game with a physical release? How early are marketing campaigns planned? How early do discs or cartridge factories get contracted? I get that the developers and programmers keep working and finishing the game, but what do the publishers waste or spend when a game gets delayed? If it is a lot, why do companies announce release dates before games go gold?
I love this question because I don't know the answer. So I'm going to listen to my colleagues now.
Oh, boy.
Well, to answer the last question, why do they announce release dates before games go gold? Several reasons. They use pre-order numbers to sort of track how many copies they should make and how many they plan to sell. And they're, if you're a publicly traded company, their investors kind of need to know when to expect that next big influx of cash to be coming.
Yeah.
In fact, a lot of leaks come from investor conferences? I've noticed as a trend since IGN family.
But those are public. So they're not really, they wouldn't really be leaks.
It's not technically leaks, but that we end up spinning up news stories often from details that were shared with investors rather than the consumer facing. Right?
Yeah. They they're required to give a look ahead at how do they expect to have a big year, not a big year. And so sometimes some executive that doesn't necessarily maybe even know that they're making huge news is like, yeah, we have a BioShock coming next year. And then our news editor is like, what? So that can happen. With a physical game release, that's a really, really great question. I don't know that I have a particularly great answer either. I mean, he's right that like a third party, like a factory, has to be contracted to like press the discs and ship them to distributors. That seems, maybe one of two things is happening. Either they have some sort of clause in their contract that lets them, rearrange or push back the time that disc is being pressed, or they owe them, some kind of make good. And if you're going to switch your time frame, each disc is now going to cost 40 cents more to press than it would have before. Like, and they just have to eat that cost. And that's just me speculating, but those seem like the only two plausible options.
Think about how much media is made in the world. I think it's really easy to spin up production on the thing you need printed, and it's all formatted and ready to go. And you can just be like, let's order 30,000 more of those. And you probably have that, that's a turnaround. That's like, that's not months, and it's probably not even weeks. It's probably days. So like, it's not too bad to change your plans when you can just have a factory just make your stuff. I just think like, again, video games are probably a very small amount of the discs that are manufactured on Earth every day. Like, it's just such a huge volume that those resources exist.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's the desired ideal outcome where like the game goes gold, where what that means is that's the finished version of the game code, that's what's going to be printed on the disc. Right. And then of course every game comes with the day one update now. So it's a little bit moot, but like, the point is that's the handoff. Like, here you go, factory. Here's the gold disc. What you're going to replicate a million times for the printed version. And like, they want to have that a certain amount of lead time in advance, but you can just like whatever your field is in, you can cut corners and accelerate things and advance things if you spend enough money or time or whatever. Like, instead of having all those game discs, be shipped over on a boat from China, like you can airlift them next day or 2 day air. Like, there's any number of ways that they can sort of like eat into whatever their lead time is before they're forced to actually delay. Like, and again, having not worked in this field, I'm just speculating that they probably eat into it and say, there's no way for us to meet our date. We need to push it back another, month or two or three or whatever it needs to be.
Think how hard it is to set a release date.
Yeah. The
first time you do it, you're like, it's so far off. Like, it probably it sounds like a good date. It's either, it's going to be in the fall. People will buy my game. But as you get closer, the longer you've announced, further out you've announced it, you're like, oh, great, that game's coming out the same day. Oh, great, that game's coming out the week before. Like, it must be terrifying. So when you delay a game out of like a crazy busy season or something, I bet that's like sometimes a pretty good business move to make.
Yeah.
And then there's all these so many other things to think about. It's just like, it's funny to think about like how much a date matters.
Yeah. Not to mention your internal production, like how many different people on different teams are all on like different train tracks that all have to arrive at the station at the exact same time. Like, it's a miracle that video games exist and launch like AAA games.
And then the marketing team is, all the while the game is being developed, the marketing team is working on their marketing plan and the big beats that they're going to hit. They're going to have the reveal trailer, the cinematic trailer, the voice talent reveal, maybe the box art reveal. And they're working with the leads on the development team to sort of plan when they think they'll be able to hit these. So then when the game is delayed, they just sort of have to like reschedule everything they have planned. But I think a silver lining to that is that the announcement of the delay is an extra marketing beat that they when the game is in, everyone's talking about the game.
Mm-hmm. A negative one, but how negative is it when it's like, this is coming out 9 months from now instead of 6 months from now? Like, it's less egregious when it's, you're not getting right up to it and people are excited.
Yeah.
It also seems to get the response from the crowd that comports with the cred of the game anyway. You know, like when CD Projekt Red says, we need some more time, everyone's like, oh, take your time, please, you geniuses, go, yes, do what you need to do.
Did I
think people are less for, go ahead.
Well, I think I said this on GameScoop, but like, we're doing some research for like, how Cyberpunk was announced. And in the first trailer, there's a joke which says, coming, dot, 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 and then it says, when it's ready. And that was like 10 years ago. It was like 2011 or something like that.
Yeah,
like, really cute. And then they made that great Grounded joke about Cyberpunk in the trailer last week, which reminded me of it.
I do think if that game's delayed one more time, it's going to start getting some side eye, though. Like, you'll start seeing op-eds on, like, is everything okay with Cyberpunk?
We are reaching the limit,
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that one can be delayed again. Okay, our final email this week comes from a woodland elf.
Nice.
All right.
Says, cool. To give you guys some context, I live out in the woods in Maine near Seth Macy and exclusively play my Switch in handheld mode because I live off the grid in a yurt and do not have access to the abundance of power that most people have. No internet or cell phone service for me, but I do have a solar array and battery bank that I can charge up my laptop and game console on.
Ooh,
cool.
This makes gaming very unique for me, which I actually enjoy, and leads me to a question. Over the years, I've built up a collection of 60 games on my Switch and have realized that I've only completed half of them, if that. This realization has made it hard to continue to purchase more games without having actually explored the games that I've already bought. Because of this, I've decided to stop buying any games until I complete my entire Switch catalog, minus the Nintendo and Super Nintendo games included in Switch Online. What do you guys think of this idea? My hope is that by the time I finish all of them, Breath of the Wild 2 will be out and balance will have been restored. Thank you guys for bringing me a moment of consistency and levity into my week every week.
Man. I couldn't live that way, gaming-wise, but I also couldn't live off-grid on a yurt with solar cells, so I don't know that my life and this person's life need to comport. But I find that since it's an interactive medium, I treat it more like a toy that has a story to it than, say, a movie. A movie or a book, I absolutely want to work my way through my backlog. If I intended to read the book and I'm halfway through and I like it, I better finish it someday. But I find I have no compunction about dropping a video game. It's almost like I wouldn't feel bad about myself for stopping playing with a deck of cards or, you know, disengaging from a game. It's a game. It's a toy. And I think the simpler way to say that is I'm greedy for new experiences. I'm not going to keep myself from experiencing the hot game that all my friends are playing and talking about. There's no way. I got to get in on it.
Yeah, that drive alone about discussion and community around games is like solely why I drop a game. You know, like I might be annoyed with a game or something, but then I kind of want to play it so I can talk about it still if everybody's playing it, right? Like that.
Yeah.
That's something like if I got pretty bored with Doom right away, but I played it for a lot more so I could come to GameScoop and keep talking about it, negatively or positively, right?
Sure.
And I think that like switching to the next big thing is like it's so part of my nature that I can relate to this person's play style. And what's also part of my nature is never going back. Like, I don't care. Like if something seemed pretty fun and it probably is going to get a lot better, I just don't look back. I never do. I feel like it's too stupid to go back and like try to learn everything that I like. To the bookmark of that game is so hard for me to wrap my head around and try again on. I'm just terrible at it.
You just returning to a game after a while and not remembering the controls.
Why was all this armor like this? Man, like go back and look at your Skyrim save file if you have played it since it came out and like look at the things that are in your inventory and it's insane. Like I can see the projects I was like right in the middle of and they make zero sense to me.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I think it's really awesome and special that he spends some of his battery life on GameScoop every week, first of all.
Yeah.
Like, he's got a finite amount of electricity in his life, and he spends some of it with us, which is awesome. No, I've said this on Scoop before, that I think there are too many amazing games and experiences out there to spend 1 second more on something you're not enjoying anymore.
Yeah.
Put it down. Huck it across. You know, if you're not reading a book or you don't like a book anymore, throw it across the room.
Oh, like, you'd apply it to all media.
Well, just if you're not liking it, like,
yeah,
dudes, you know, people that don't like to read or they don't like games. It's like, well, no, just find one you do like. With the asterisk being like, you know, money and budget isn't unlimited. And there can definitely be fun to be found if you have 60 game on your Switch 60 games. There's probably some diamonds in there that like, yeah, like if you give them a deeper shot, you're probably going to find some enjoyment in there that you missed the first time around. But generally speaking, in my 20s, I would say I felt very guilty about a backlog and I had a master list of like every video game I wanted to beat. And now I'm like, man, like the game has to earn my time and attention every time I play it.
Yep.
Sometimes I think the people around me help with that though. And if somebody tells me and I like them and I like their opinion and they say the first 2 hours of this game suck, I will absolutely go through those first 2 hours to get to the good stuff. But I need to know that. And that's what I really like about game criticism and reviews. I love being told like that, like, hey, you might end up really liking this game, but like, here's something you need to know about it first. I mean, Animal Crossing was that way. Like a lot of people had to tell each other like, hey, yeah, getting the iron bits is going to suck. But once you figure that out, you're never going to think about it again. And don't worry about it. That's not the game.
Red Dead 2 comes to mind because I had, and I
spent 40 hours and you're gonna like Red Dead 2.
No. For maybe 90 minutes, I didn't like Red Dead 2, but I really didn't like it. And I think it's an experience a lot of people had. It was the slow pace of opening drawers and picking things up.
It was ugly too.
Yeah. It was.
Snow area is not very pretty.
That's true. And I had to have several people say, no, it's intentional. They're trying to differentiate it from GTA and capture the bucolic pace of Western lifestyle. And I think that seems true. Playing the fullness of the game, A, one of the best games I've ever played, and B, that pacing did seem very intentional. So I just think there's an area you can carve out for a work that's challenging or demands deeper thought. You know, I wouldn't huck the book across the room the first instant I'm bored with it. But if you have a chapter or two under your belt, yeah, get out of there. Bail.
Do you know the 50-day rule?
No, what's that rule?
I don't use this. But if you don't enjoy a book by the first 50 pages, you burn it. No, you don't burn it. You give it back to the library or you pass it on to a friend or something. But that like, you know, that 50 pages is enough of a time to realize like, am I enjoying this or not? Now, I've absolutely hit a wall in a book where I'm like, this is definitely not my thing and I will move on from here. I don't think it's 50 pages and I don't check myself on that. But like, what is that for games? Well, I think it's, again, like it's more influenced by people around you than, you know, your own personal experience, except for this woodland elf who is completely alone and probably will have to set up some sort of system by which he or she can determine whether to go back to a game or not.
There are infinite books out there. There are infinite games out there. Don't force yourself to slog through something just because.
Yeah. That does sound like a bad idea.
Yeah, for sure.
Here's something you can do with your old games is make a project out of it. If you were going to say like, oh, I'm going to, make a podcast about each game or something like that. If you're making a creative work from something that you don't enjoy, that's actually a really cool process. And I really encourage people to do that. Take art and make art. I think that's a really good way to make the best out of the things you have that you might not play through for enjoyment.
No more podcasts. Just listen to Game Scoop.
Okay, I just heard Michael say an exact thing that he said on his podcast that I listened to about The Last of Us. So I know that having more than one podcast out there is possible.
Well, you're not expressing entirely unique thoughts and opinions on our show, Michael Swain.
There's some overlap. The Venn diagram has some overlap, I'll grant you. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I do want to listen to that guy's Yurtcast.
Yeah. I'm a little bit jealous of these Game Scoop listeners that are living in and gaming in nature, Mr. or Mrs. Elf living in the yurt. And then there was another Game Scoop fan who pasted a photo in the Facebook group. I think it was over Memorial Day weekend. They'd driven their camper out to the woods and it appeared to be all by himself. And his camper had a TV built into the side and he was playing The Last of Us Part II just in the middle of the woods. It must not have been Memorial Day then since that game wasn't out yet, but it was sometime recently.
That's the scariest possible way to play a scary game is to be absolutely alone.
But I also like the idea of just playing games alone in the middle of the woods and nowhere. That sounds really nice.
Setup is awesome. Yeah,
I want that. That is a really cool setup. You know, Damon, you can just go into Golden Gate Park, just find a little forested nook and just
there's nowhere you can be alone in Golden Gate Park these days.
It is full to the brim.
Yes.
before I had kids, I used to fantasize about like what I wanted was like a cabin in the woods and then like somehow have high speed internet through like a satellite connection or something. Like now with family, like I want them to experience the culture and everything that you get, you know, by living around people. But that was something that maybe someday I'll be able to achieve that for myself.
Yeah, I like that idea too. And that brings us to Video Game 20 Questions. Our suggestion this week comes from Brett Perry in Salt Lake City, Utah. And he says, longtime listener, first time writing in. I'm a U.S. speed skater training for the 2022 Olympics.
Cool.
Let's hope it still Let's hope it still happens. As much as I like to listen to music to hype me up before my races, I always first check to see if the latest episode of Game Scoop has dropped. Thank you for making quality content every week and helping me take my mind off racing. That's amazing. Is the first, the first Olympic athlete that we've ever gotten a letter into for Game Scoop. So that's
that we know of.
That we know of.
It could all be. Statistically, that's very unlikely.
Do you have an official name for fans of the show? Scoopies? Scooplets?
We usually call them just the listeners, usually.
Listeners.
We also need to acknowledge the viewers as well.
Yeah. They're honorary Omega Cops.
Yeah, they are all honorary Omega Cops. Okay, let the questioning begin.
Michael, did you win last time?
Last time I was on, I think it was Sly Cooper, and we got it.
We got it?
On like question 20.
That's right.
Okay.
Is it Sly Cooper? No. I'm going to start the same way I started last time. Was this game released post-2000?
Yes.
Is this game available on the Nintendo Switch?
No.
Does this game what's the multiplayer qualifier? Does this game have competitive multiplayer?
Yes.
Ooh! Yay!
I feel like people who've been on more have time-honored strategies and directions.
It's completely arbitrary every single time. There's no forethought or planning put into it at all. I can't emphasize that enough.
Great. Good. Is this game on current-gen consoles?
No.
Is this game first-person shooter?
No. That's about it.
Yeah. Okay.
But it does have competitive multiplayer.
And it was not at least, it wasn't released on current gen consoles.
Is this a peaceful game?
No.
It's probably backwards compatible is why I assume Damon was
he
a little...
stuttered a bit. Yeah. But I assume released on previous gen.
That's the scoop code. That's how we're going to take that.
It's the meta game. Not a first person shooter. Is it worth asking if there are is gunplay though?
It could be a third person shooter.
Right. Do you shoot guns at each other in this game?
Yes.
Okay.
Is it? Is it a two dimensional game?
No.
So it is a third person shooter.
Is it a military setting? Is it set in a military?
Could be Gears of War. Could be.
I can't accurately answer the military setting question.
Whoa.
Is it? Do you play as soldiers who are in an army?
I think we just
kind? Is that the that could be different because you could be like, is Halo military or do you mean modern era military? Yeah. I think that was the struggle. Yeah. I don't know.
Do you play as a human?
Yes.
Do you hide behind strategically positioned, like waist high cover in the game? Are you ducking behind little blocks of cover?
I'll give you. There is a cover system. That's 10.
Okay. Could be Uncharted. Could be, though that's actively not military.
And could was be, Uncharted multi? Was there competitive multiplayer?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just never dipped into it.
Could was be there? Is this a console exclusive?
No.
Multiplat, third person cover shooter.
Is it from a publisher that has E3 press conferences?
Well, not today.
Cool. No. That's actually weird.
Yeah, that is a little weird. C- Konami, Sega.
Do we know Japanese? That'd be weird at this point. Well, that'd actually help.
Oh, we don't even know what, like, after 2000 covers such a time frame.
That's true. I was thinking of asking after. Well, but it's last gen.
Yeah, that's true.
That kind of narrows it down.
It's at least last gen.
I want to ask, is there a clean way to ask whether it's fanciful or grounded in reality?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's like Sam's favorite question.
Okay. Does this game take place in modern day Earth?
Yes.
Okay.
Ghost Recon.
Yeah, and yet he seemed to struggle with a military question. It seems like that would be so cut and dried.
Well, maybe there. I don't know who you are in those games. You're some shadowy someone.
That's true. You're disavowed by the government.
Probably.
And the E3 press conference question might exclude that.
That's true. They do have press conferences.
Is this a Japanese game?
No.
Who would have?
I don't know. Activision doesn't have conferences anymore.
Oh, yeah, of course. That's a really good point.
Was this an Activision game?
No. That's 15.
We started off so good.
Yeah.
It's third person also.
We started off so good.
Well, wait, is there Gears of War is excluded or? Well, he said modern day Earth. Yeah.
Well, and it's exclusive. This is a multi-platform game.
That's right.
So, okay. So
it's not military. And then that Gears of War is obviously, that's what's really weird. This sounds like a cartoony almost game or something like that.
So it takes place on modern day Earth. It's multi-platform. It's not Japanese. You shoot guns at each other and it's not first person and it's not two-dimensional. And then the company that made it used to have E3 press conferences.
I didn't say that. I said they don't have them today. No, I said they don't have them today.
What the hell?
That doesn't necessarily...
That could mean they never had one, right?
Oh.
Is this an indie game?
No.
Well,
what's the series? The name is slipping my mind, but where it's fully based on grapple hooking and hang gliding around. No? Anyone?
Hooking and hang gliding.
Bueller?
Far Cry? Right. Just Cause?
Just Cause. I was like, it's like Far Cry, but you have a grapple hook and it's just sillier. Cause. Just Cause.
Yeah, maybe those. Do those games have multiplayer in them?
I just know it's third person shooty modern day.
Yeah. Those games too.
That's true. I don't know if those games have. They must have a multiplayer mode. It could be. I mean, it could be something. It could be like, you know, Saints Row. Or like something.
Oh,
weird.
Or Project Mayhem or something weird like that. Yeah, although that was current gen.
Who published both those games? That's what I need to know.
Nobody knows.
Saints Row is THQ.
Is it?
Yeah. And Just Cause would be probably like Square Enix or something like that. It's Eidos.
It's amazing to me that the publisher helps you. That doesn't help me as much.
I know, but it's like from doing the industry for a long time. They
for sure.
Does this game have a open world single player campaign?
No.
Oh, great. Cool. So it's not any of those.
Nothing we've mentioned so far.
Single player campaign. I think that's a really cool idea. Like, what if this is just multiplayer?
I also don't think those games have.
Five. Screwed it up. The question that we talked about, I think Tina brought up last week, was this: is this a multiplayer focused game?
That's yep. That's a good one.
Just Cause does not have a cover system. You know, Saints Row.
Oh, that's true. I don't recall it having a cover system, or at least not like you not where you snap to cover. You know what I mean? Yeah, I assume that's what he meant when he said there's a cover system.
Those games are also open world, so it's not any of those.
There's a little context I can think of where you're like taking cover and shooting that's not military, but it might be like some post-apocalyptic game or, oh no, it can't be because it's modern day Earth. Why would people be killing each other? What if it's like Payday? I'm just trying to think of why people are killing each other.
On Payday modern day Earth.
Payday could be really good.
Yeah.
Like crime, right? Crime, like mm-hmm. just Prime game too. I don't know what Perspective Payday is.
The Getaway?
I think
that was an obscure game.
That's a open world game.
That's a deep cut. Oh, it is. You're right.
I don't know who published Payday either. And then there's like other like crime mob games like Mafia type stuff.
Yeah. Those are all open world.
And Japanese.
Should we ask if it's multiplayer focused or do you think it's too late? That question boat has sailed.
I think Where would that leave Payday?
Payday is, I think, exclusively multiplayer.
Yeah, go for it, Michael.
Is this game multiplayer focused?
can you refine your question?
People play this game for the multiplayer.
Did most people spend the most hours with this game engaging in the multiplayer component? He doesn't know.
I can't answer that question.
Don't know for sure. Okay.
Could it be? Is there anything stopping it from being Max Payne? One, two, or three?
Just remember that there are different types of multiplayer.
Well, we did say competitive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What are you getting at? What does that mean?
Maybe you're not shooting at each other, but I'm thinking of like Police Trainer. You're competing for a high score.
Right. Or you're bowling.
We explicitly said you're shooting each other.
You're bowling and you get mad, so you shoot at each other.
Yeah, how does this comport with the are you shooting each other with guns question? That's confusing.
That's true. We said, are you shooting at each other with guns? And he said yes.
Yep. And I believe your question was that was there a competitive multiplayer mode?
Mm-hmm.
I don't like this one bit. I don't like
so maybe.
Could it be a Resident Evil?
No, because it's not Japanese.
No, modern day Earth and Japanese. Yep.
Yeah. I don't know. Where did we screw up, Damon?
Yeah, answer that. Yes or no? Where did we screw up?
you do screw up by not asking if it's multiplayer focused. But then that's also tough because there's different types of multiplayer, and a game can have different types of multiplayer.
I'm going to assume
all
we
have the same game.
That thing that he keeps saying doesn't make sense to me, but I know it's supposed to.
I know.
Like, it's like multiplayer, like competitive multiplayer has like, there's like puzzles.
Yeah. Well, it's probably like some shooter game, but then the multiplayer was like only racing.
Yeah.
like something weird like that.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
Here's another big hint. You've said the name of the publisher.
That is a big hint. What's that do for your memory palace, Sam? Come on.
Yeah, I mean, we mentioned
IDOS, Activision.
IDOS and Activision.
Square Enix.
THQ, yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Tomb Raider? None of the
IDOS.
None of those.
Does Deus Ex have it? Nah, it's not modern day. Curses!
Should we do a Hail Mary for one like THQ or something?
Yeah, I think we got her. Go for it.
I don't know if David likes that one. Is this a THQ game?
No.
Okay.
What? So, how many questions are we at?
You have one question and a guess.
All right. Well, should we do? Is it a Square Enix game?
Yep. Is this a Square Enix game?
Even though you know it's not made in Japan.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, that's the thing. I don't know who published it. We asked the Activision question, right?
I think we did ask, is this Activision, didn't we?
No. We did. My bad.
We did. Okay.
Who else did we mention? 2K?
IDOS and THQ. Is this an IDOS game?
Yes. All right. You have a guess.
Well, that doesn't help me at all other than Deus Ex. That's the only one I know is IDOS. And it might not be.
What do they make?
They made Just Cause and Tomb Raider, I think. And before those had different publishers.
It was Core Design developing it and IDOS publishing Tomb Raider back in the day, right? Before they got bought by Square. Is that the correct history? Maybe?
Something like that, yeah.
An installment of Tomb Raider wouldn't be a bad guess.
Well, I don't know that any of those had multiplayer, did they? Certainly not.
I don't know either.
Competitive multiplayer? Or did they?
Yeah, I don't know. And then...
The second one did. The second one had that really weird multiplayer mode where you got the cards.
Weird multiplayer is kind of what he seemed to be dancing around.
Mm-hmm. True. What was the second of the modern Tomb Raider trilogy called?
Oh, just Rise of the Tomb Raider?
Or is that the third one? Shadow was the third one.
Yeah.
So for the record, I think that this is a bad guess. But as far as guesses go, like, it's not that bad.
Well, and also that was published by Square Enix, so it's just not it.
Well, but it wasn't developed by them, and I think we asked where the game was made.
No, we are talking about the publisher.
Okay, well, I don't know. That's what I would guess.
And that means it's last gen. It's just going to be really hard for us to get to. All right, yeah, I don't have a guess. I think we can just give up.
All right, everyone gives up?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, we guess Rise of the Tomb Raider on the 1/1000th chance that it's right, but yeah.
You're guessing Rise of the Tomb Raider?
That's right.
Even though you know it's not this gen?
Hey, we don't like it when you do this to us. We tried to give up.
Okay, we give up. He's right. We give up.
This game is a third-person shooter with a cooperative campaign on 360, PS3, and PC. It was developed by IO Interactive when they were taking a break from Hitman. And it was published.
Lynch.
It was published by Eidos. It is Kane and Lynch, Deadman.
Oh, my gosh. I did play that game.
I played Kane and Lynch too, like a sucker.
Yeah, wow. Kane and Lynch Deadman. Yeah, so the there's also a competitive multiplayer mode, but then the campaign is cooperative.
Which I think was Payday like.
I think Payday I think Payday is cooperative. Four people try to rob a bank, right?
Well, but I think it's cops versus robbers.
Hmm.
I think okay. So. Barely remember.
Huh. But yeah, that was that game's big selling point. Co-op campaign. Yeah.
As for the military question, I think you're like a former soldier, but then
we got to crime game.
And you're just embroiled in issues. Yeah, yeah. It's not really military.
We still wouldn't have gotten it, but we would have. Because like I think like when we started thinking, like, how could you be shooting people? We got to cops and robbers.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty good.
No, well, the synapse that remembers the name Kane and Lynch has not fired in my brain for some time.
There's that era of like Kane and Lynch and like Army of Two. There was like a hot second where that was a thing.
Does it have a statue in the IGN office is one that we should be asking.
Mm.
Yeah. Wait,
I haven't seen a statue of Kane
and Lynch in the office.
Well, there was. Yeah. I haven't seen that one in a while.
I'm sure it's disassembled with a dismemberment all the way up to 10. In one of our storage units right now.
Yeah, or it's in the Burger
I've seen that. Like our facilities manager will take those statues and they actually come apart in these like terrifying ways. And then I'll just walk by a box and there'll just be like limbs everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, the first couple weeks I was working there, he had his, the closet where all his materials are open. And for weeks, I just saw him assemble a goose from Untitled Goose Game.
Oh, yeah.
But then we went on quarantine. We never even placed it in the space, but he built a goose.
Yeah. I was thinking that if you turned up the dismemberment settings on a game with spiders in it, you would just get so many limbs that it'd be hard for a system to handle.
Yeah. Hashtag too many legs.
Yeah, especially if it was like one of those clowns that has a spider for like its neck hole. And then like
hashtag neck hole.
There would just be hairy spider legs everywhere. Is this the opposite of ASMR?
Yeah.
Shouting about hairy spider legs.
Just a bag of spider legs shaking down on top of you is anti-ASMR.
As you slowly turn your mouth upward.
Did Eidos used to have E3 press conferences? I don't know.
I don't know.
They used to be a publisher, and then they were purchased by Square Enix, and now they're a studio.
Oh.
Still making like Deus Ex.
At least I impressed Michael by mentioning publishers and making it seem like it'd be helpful. That was my goal.
It's like a magic trick to me, yeah, to know by publisher. That's just I would absorb every word of every game pro except what company was responsible for what.
I didn't. You're definitely right. Like, there's definitely a weird, like, video game culture is weird in that game. Like, Activision makes Tony Hawk. Like, no, who's like, what label is like Rihanna signed to? Like, I'm a fan of BMI music. Like, nobody knows that stuff.
Yeah. Or movie studios.
Yeah,
spend 10 years doing it and it just gets vacuumed in there.
Universal movies are the best ones.
All right, that is all the scoops that we have for you this week. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address gamescoop@ign.com. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Borba, working behind the scenes. What was that, Sam?
I said bye, listeners. But I also wanted to say good luck to our competitive skater and our competitive yurt liver.
I don't know if he's competing in his yurt living.
Doing better than you.
He's the number one yurt liver on in Game Scoop history, I think, at this point.
I think he's actively not competing. He's competing the least amount possible.
No, he's competing for time on that solar array.
Liver is already a word with a very different meaning. We're not livers. We're not all livers who are living.
Yurt dweller. Fine.
My name is Damon. This is IGN Game Scoop, and we're out.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make season two even more memorable together.